Welcome to The Fighting Priests, a podcast exploring orthodoxy and jiu-jitsu. Two paths, one struggle. Father Ted Perestivopoulos and Father Thomas Sandberg are two Orthodox Christian priests who also happen to be practitioners of jiu-jitsu. Together, they explore how these two unique worlds intersect and what it means for our spirituality. Here's Father Ted and Father Thomas. Welcome, everybody, back to The Fighting Priests. This is part two of the wonderful interview that we had with Captain Andrei Petrov, the U.S. Marine who has served for about 13 years and is currently a single-stripe purple belt and transitioning into civilian life, where he is finishing seminary and getting ready for ordination in the Orthodox Church. This is part two of that interview, as it was a very long one, and the final part of our discussion. We hope you enjoy the rest of the interview.
I was going to ask Andrei, actually. It's like, I was just thinking about this now, you know, because you mentioned, you know, communist Russia and, you know, people who were oppressed. And the church, of course, was oppressed under those years. And not just in Russia, but like the whole Soviet bloc, right? Like, so all the northern, eastern Balkan countries that were under. Because you mentioned, like, even like training during those years was illegal. I think, who did we speak to? We spoke to like Ivan Milchev from Bulgaria, I think. And he was one of our guests, I think, in like season two, I think. And he was like a Sambo black belt, and also he's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And he was talking about when he was young, I think it was him, or maybe it was Nenad Latinčić in Serbia. But more than one of those guys, you know, they lived under communist rule in those countries. And I think both of them said that, you know, when they first started doing Jiu-Jitsu back in the day, right, it was like that. It was like a Boy Scouts kind of thing, or like it was a gym, you know, just like lifting weights and stuff, right? But really they were doing Sambo in the back, or they were doing or even like rudimentary jiu-jitsu, but it had to be under the cover of, you know, of exercise. I think it was a Serbian guy. It was Nenad, because in Bulgaria they allowed it, but even though it was communist, but for some reason in Serbia they didn't. And so it's kind of fascinating to see how they had to kind of do all that under the guise of like exercise. And then when communism was overthrown, and the Soviet Union fell, and then suddenly all these guys were coming out of the woodwork and they're like starting to teach seminars and stuff, and you know, start planning competitions and things like literally right away, right? So the question I had for Andrei was like, you know, have you ever contemplated, even Father Thomas, like all those Orthodox Christians, you know, who were persecuted under communist rule, it's like, would it have been a good thing for them to have been able to defend themselves, like from a personal point of view, from Marshall's point of view? Or was it a good thing that they did not, which did create a whole new era of martyrdom, which inspired the church, but was it necessarily the only way that it could have gone? It would have been good for like people to be able to defend themselves, or even defend the people who were weaker than them, right? I don't know. Just a thought that kind of popped in my head. Like, what would have been better, right?
Yeah, no, I think the newly martyred saints that we celebrate, actually not that long ago, they're, you know, I think it's the quantity of them is actually greater than the first, you know, three centuries. So the blood of them has, you know, preserved the whole Russia, you know, in the long term. But I think if you kind of reframe the way I thought about, you know, a lot of people that are in the military ask me, why is Lazar Nicholas the second, why was he canonized? You know, it's the question of, you know, why didn't the Tsar fight? You know, why didn't he, why is he a saint? You know, why didn't he just order to this, you know, this Bolsheviks from St. Petersburg and Moscow? Why didn't he just subdue, you know, violence with violence? And that's what you're essentially asking me, Father, if I understand it correctly. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those questions where maybe I can somehow tie it to Ecclesiastes III, which I think sticks out of my mind. You brought it up in the last one. It's time for war. It's time for peace. But you know, that's maybe later on. However, when you have, and this is a very historical kind of the origins of Russian Revolution. I think it got to the point where you can tie it back to why did, you know, Constantinople fall to the Turks? There was plenty of people that were in the church, and even the bishop that was, you know, he was a Mason, a Masonry lodge, and he was advocating to basically get rid of the Tsar. You know, Tsar's closest advisors, even his relatives, So half of the generals, half his generals betrayed him. You know, when people betray you, it's a matter of like, okay, do people even earn, you know, a czar like that? You know, because he could have like, you know, went to some other places where his monarchy could have been preserved. But he the reason that he decided to stay and be and kill his whole family is that he was very religious and to the point where that wasn't it was just, you know, essentially prolonging the I guess popular view of that, you know, the monarchy wasn't the way to go, and they didn't come to realize that what they wanted was, you know, was going to be much worse. But yeah, it was a matter of a rotten system, even in the clergy. You know, the clergy of today even recognize that, and you know, the officers that he had under him.
Sure.
I think, like, even look, I don't know, like, if you are going to fight, like, just strategically, if you think of ideas, especially bad ideas, as like communism or socialism as viruses, if it infects all these people and, you know, the minority can see where this is going and the majority thinks it's a good thing, right? I don't, even if you fight back, you're going to lose, right? You have to let those things
unfold
and yeah, and unfortunately, because it's a horrible idea, when you put it into action then horrible things happen.
Mm-hmm.
Even like, didn't Joe Rogan have a guy on his podcast recently? He thinks like China, there's in 10 years, right, with what's going on in China, if you think of it as a communist experiment from the student revolution made in the 50s, it's not gonna last forever. Communism never lasts forever because it's a flawed, horrible system. Unfortunately, until it collapses or burns itself out, there's a lot of casualties along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And people will, even people who don't believe, will support it out of fear, like the certain Jews in the concentration camps who sold out their own brethren, right? You know, you always have the people out of fear who are doing things. So you have the people who are true believers, the people who are just don't want to face consequences, even though they don't agree. And at the bottom, you're going to have the people who are totally opposed to it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going against the mass of, you know, like it's like the revolution in Greece, right? They didn't. Eventually, when you strategically, you can tell this is the time to do it, and you do it. Now, whether or not that's good or bad, I don't know.
Right? Good point. Yeah. Good point, Andre. I think you had something to say.
Yeah, and I was thinking, you know, we can take this more of the, maybe some of the listeners are more I guess secular. You know, there's a Orthodox value that Jocko, you know, has in his extreme ownership and detachment. So the detachment, you know, and the metaphor of the of a root of a tree, you know, the way I was kind of brought up is that, you know, the Orthodoxy is when it's taken out of its, you know, monarchy, you know, whatever land that it's growing in, and it's put into water, you know, the roots get stronger. So the ability to detach, you know, Christians, you know, we have to detach in an environment where it's hostile. We become stronger, and you see that in the first 3 centuries before, you know, Saint Constantine, where, you know, that's the church is building those roots. And sometimes it's not, you know, the growth of Christianity is spurred better in an environment that's hostile to it. It's just, you know, we have to stay detached from it, you know, operate what we can in it. And one of the first books I've ever read that got me churched, you know, was Father Arseny. I'm sure you guys came across it. You know, it's a priest that was in his labor camps, and yeah, and you know, that's a product of having conversations with people. And, you know, what was going on in those the prisoners and the conversations they had, they were still divided. So no matter who you put in power, they were still divided in prison, and they came to Orthodoxy only, you know, by seeing the example of this priest. Because of that example, it wasn't prevalent, you know, in the revolution of Russia, but it was prevalent. They met that in the church in dire, dire conditions.
Yeah, I think under those conditions, like you said before, you know, when you go to war, you're fighting for the guy next to you, to your left and to your right. And at some point, the political kind of ideologies are gonna fit. Like, if you get desperate enough, I believe that it's gonna be. You're going to be fighting for your family or for the people next to you, right? Beyond anything else. Now, there are some people like who are so indoctrinated that they will go down fighting for an idea, but not always. Usually it's survival, right? It's at the core of people, it's survival.
Sorry to interrupt you, Folly. Yeah, that, to get to that point, I'm listening to a podcast right now, Lex Fridman, and he has this professor, and it's about the American Civil War. Mm-hmm. And he last night when I was driving back from jiu-jitsu, I was at the part where he I think Lex had asked the professor, like, why were these people fighting? I don't know which right? He thought maybe the majority was just out of fear, mm-hmm. right? It wasn't actually like that they wanted, like the Confederates necessarily wanted slavery to go into new territories, which is what Lincoln was fighting against, right? It was mostly just it's fear because this thing's going on and it's stretching, and how long it was, like 4 years, right? Like at some point, even if they did believe in the idea, yeah, eventually, like, you see the devastation and you see you're losing.
Yes.
It's chaos.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's nice. It's idealistic when, like, in theory, but then, yeah, when you actually see neighbor killing neighbor.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what that was another point he made, that like, I think that was the most killings was from the Civil War in American history. Right. And most of those killings were hand to hand combat. You have American killing American within arm's reach because the type of war it was and the weaponry they used. Mm-hmm. It was like, whereas he said now war is more from a distance, right? He says then it was like American against American within arm's reach for whatever reason.
Yeah, and let me tell you guys, just from, you know, like I said, I'm not a combat vet. I've just been to proximity of combat. You know, a policeman in Detroit had more combat experience than I ever had, you know, what I observe from modern day and studied modern combat and seen it, there's nothing noble in it. You know, there's a lot more nobility what you guys do, what we do on the mats, where mm-hmm. you say it's a hand to hand ability to defend yourself. That's noble. And, you know, obviously I'm not ever going to go back, God forbid, in case, you know, nuclear get involved. But yeah, the fourth war is going to be fought with sticks and, you know, knives. But yeah. You know, our one of our icons in the Marine Corps is the retired General Mattis, and he said, the most important 6 inches on battlefield is between your ears, you know, and that's important mm-hmm. from a general down to you know, Lance Corporal and PFC. But yeah, the modern warfare is not glorious. What we do in jiu-jitsu, and obviously to be ordained in the clergy, you know, obviously you guys can talk about, there's the strict rules of, you know, not bearing arms. You're not, there's penance, you know, if you're a warrior before that, there's penance to do that. You know, Father Ted talked about a previous podcast on this topic. But yeah, you're willing to do the penance after war. You know, you can get ordained, but you can't bear arms. However, you know, you have situations like priest Daniel Sisoev, if you heard how he was martyred. You know,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
A Muslim extremist, right? So,
yeah.
You know, is that, you know, because he left a family. He left a young wife and, you know, kids behind him. If he had some sort of martial arts training, you know, if that was God's will that he was able to protect them, or, you know, he died as a martyr and he left, you know, enough writings and he was spiritually developed. And then you have, you know, another example. I'm not going to name who it is, but it's a modern day, you know, protector of an icon, or, you know, more streaming icons out there. But yeah, when he was approached by a person that wanted to basically murder him, and when that person came to an icon, he repented and he told that clergy member that, you know, once he saw the icon, God talked to him, and he basically, you know, took that weapon away, and then he was able to get preserved by the grace of the icon that was there. And, the clergyman didn't have to revert to any, you know, even though, you know, he you know, he had an ability to defend himself if he wanted to. So those mm-hmm. are the kind of things that I'm kind of, you know, if I had time to ask questions, would be, you know, what is the purpose of training jiu-jitsu and martial arts if you're, you know, a priest, and what is that spiritual, I guess, benefits that you guys gain from it?
That's fascinating, actually. I would say, beyond the ability to do things, I think the mental benefits are just as great. So, like, from a spiritual point of view, so, like, doing jiu-jitsu, okay, the most obvious is the physical ability to defend oneself, to defend other people who are not, you know, as strong as you, to be able to subdue an attack. Okay, that's, you know, the most obvious, right? But, like, I think it goes back to what we talked about in the first episode, the second episode, the blessed of the meek, the idea of meekness, right? So, like, meekness in the biblical sense is the fact that you are dangerous, but you choose not to be, or you choose to subdue that, or you are you are a good steward of your abilities, and you are you have control over your abilities, right? So being dangerous, as in the sense that having you know, having the potential of doing harm but not, is more powerful and more righteous than somebody who cannot control themselves, right? Or doesn't have any kind of ability anyways, right? So like a person who's helpless, well, they're helpless by their own nature, like they don't know anything, or they're weak, whatever, right? But a person who's strong and chooses not to use that strength, right, that is a spiritual virtue,
right? Yeah.
This meekness. And jiu-jitsu teaches you that, because jiu-jitsu gives you like this gift. Like it gives you like this, I don't want to say weapon, but okay, let's say it gives you this weapon, right? It gives you this ability, right? But then you have to exercise your self-control, right? And that is very beneficial from an orthodox point of view, because like anything, everything is about exercising self-control, right? This is why we fast, right? So of course, we don't just fast from food, we don't just fast from words, but you should also fast from when to use force or not, or when you do and when you don't, and having that discernment. This is all connected, right? So it's just another dimension to the spiritual growth. So for me, like jiu-jitsu, like this, I take much more away from the mental / spiritual, you know, effects that it has on me than just the physical. I don't know, Father Thomas, if you have thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think if we recognize mankind as a psychosomatic being, right, soul and body, or tripartite, soul, body, spirit, however you want to think of this. I find being a priest is very stressful, right? And so it helps take care of the stress from life, and that in turn has spiritual benefits because of the soul-body connection. And of course, I think also another thing that's very beneficial is the crushing of the ego daily that comes with training, right? Because, mm-hmm. yeah, like I'm a first-degree black belt, but there's other black belts, or there's like purple belts who are younger or train more. So there's always, right? And I always have an open mind, and I always go in as a white belt. Like I'm not the teacher, I'm a student. So I'm always learning every day, and it helps you keep yourself in check, because especially like here, like I'm in a parish by myself. There's no other Greek Orthodox priests around, right? So you could just do anything you wanted, like, you know, and unless someone reports you to the bishop or you're doing something wholly wrong, you can just keep doing what you're doing. So you always need something to hone you in and keep you honest and real, and jiu-jitsu helps do that, right?
And just to add to that, also you're constantly put in the position of, like, you know, when you're about to be submitted, let's say, okay, so it's not a good feeling, right? You know, someone has mount, you know, they've chicken wing your arms over your head, you know, and you can't do anything. You feel completely helpless, right? And you're fighting like crazy to get out of that position because you don't want to tap, right? But then again, being in that position, psychologically speaking and spiritually speaking, is good to kind of be brought to the edge of being dominated and be submitted all the time, and being able to kind of either, you know, to find that kind of sweet spot, that balance between, okay, I'm fighting, I'm trying to get out, but then there's some cases where I can't get out. And then I got to accept the consequences of my actions, right? I screwed up somewhere along the way. That I allowed my partner to get to this point, because if I didn't screw up, then I wouldn't be in this position, right? Like, whether they're better, or I made some kind of mistake. That's how jiu-jitsu works, right? If so I allowed it to get to this point, and now I can't get out, and now I'm going to be submitted. And so even accepting that submission is really important, humility, right? So and learning that balance between when to fight, like when like do I still have a chance to get out of this, and when to acknowledge that I have no exit right now, and I just have to basically take one for the team. I have to, like, I'm going to lose, and I have to accept that, right? And then of course you reset, and you do it again, and you do it again, and you do it again. But knowing the difference between, can I win in the sense, like, in any meaningful way, can I get out of the situation, and do I have to accept my fate as it is, I think is a very valuable orthodox lesson to have in spiritual life. And it's also, it tempers the ego. Because sometimes, yeah, sometimes it's appropriate to fight, and sometimes appropriate to get out of a situation, because there's more to be lost by surrendering or by losing. But then there's also situations where you need to lose, or whether you deserve to lose. And acknowledging those points in your life are just as important as winning. And jiu-jitsu does that to you all the time, multiple times in one session. And people don't get that unless they're actually in that situation. And then you deal with the stress as well, right? Because if you've been under side control, if you've been under side control under me at 310 pounds, you learn how to pray.
There's this quote I came across in preparation for talking to you gentlemen. So it rhymes in Russian. So the way it translates is, war breaks out usually in places, that there's violence, but there's no concentration of will. In Russian, sounds tam насилие, где нет усилия. So when it talks about concentration of will, усилия is where we're getting ready for the great land here. There will be a lot of concentration of will to get to the discernment, declarative mind of this, the spiritual battle that, sometimes that we don't have the ability to fight without grace, right? So the humility aspect, you gentlemen talked about, having an opponent who's better than you, who's equal, and who's less skilled, to hone your abilities to, but to be, to have the humility, you have to have somebody better than you, you have to be willing to go against them to subdue that ego. Because ego clouds everything, but yeah, it's definitely helpful. So I'm glad that I came across your podcast, Fathers, that, before my image of priest was not somebody that we had actually one deacon here that he transferred to a different parish when I came to Stafford, to St. Herman's, is that he's an instructor at FBI. He teaches jiu-jitsu black belt at FBI Academy. He's also a deacon, Father Joseph. But yeah, before hearing about you guys, that essentially it's a beneficial spiritual physical activity. But the things that I want to kind of throw out there, I know and I gave you that kind of, Father, the notebook for my purple belt kind of journey, the Bloom's taxonomy. Taxonomy, I had to look up that word yesterday. It's a Greek word, and it's a basically law of arrangement, taxis and nomos, right? So the mental and the physical aspect of jiu-jitsu is in that Bloom's taxonomy, which is taught to mid-level officers in the Marine Corps of adult learning, model. But essentially why the bug is so addictive about jiu-jitsu is that your mind goes through those, six levels of remember, understand, apply, analyze, and evaluate, and then essentially get to the point where you create different moves and those. But my wife, she the reason she doesn't want me training in the evening, she's in, Father Thomas, my wife is away right now on vacation in Hawaii, and I'm able to train in the evenings, which I haven't been able to do. Because once I train, I get in this mode of flow of, where everything, just the time stops, and that's very reminiscent after, the liturgy, and where, mm-hmm. Good prayer, and just the time everything stops, and there's this, I'm sure you guys heard of it, Mihaly talks about the 8 characteristics of flow, of how to get into the, the state of flow, but it's very, very reminiscent of spiritual prayer, and after a good confession and partaking of the Eucharist, something your mind gets into.
Nice. Yeah.
No, it depends. That's what I find. I find places like I value freedom, and I find the places where I'm the most free is, of course, in church, in the liturgy, training, and then like climbing mountains, being in nature, because you're. When you have time to do all those things, well, liturgy, you're outside of time, but like the other stuff, you're free of all the constraints that weigh you down in life, right? So there's so many responsibilities you have, or stresses you have, or things to do, but like when you're on the mats, all that matters at that moment is the training, right? You found a way to make it there, and maybe it'll help you once you leave. You're de-stressed, you're able to attack things or approach things from a better perspective or a clearer head, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And like, Andre, you had asked me about that. Like, I think leading up to this, you had asked me, as someone going into ministry soon, you were concerned about that, this idea of the stress of ministry and, tapping out to that kind of the burnout. And you've seen it, and I'm sure, we see it in other priests, and we see it. And you had asked me about that, how do you kind of have that balance, or how do you not succumb to all the things that come from what we call clergy burnout, things like that. And interestingly enough, jiu-jitsu is a big part of it. Like for me, jiu-jitsu was that kind of missing part of my ministry, of my life, that helped me kind of rein in that burnout, because I was experiencing it a lot before I started jiu-jitsu. I was much more overweight. I didn't feel well. I was feeling down. I was all over the place. I felt like I was being pulled in 50,000 different directions, and I didn't feel like I was getting anywhere. It's like being in quicksand, you know? And that took like, that was over 10 years in the ministry to come to that realization, which is bad. Right? You don't want to, it's better to have that realization going into ministry, right? Than having to kind of suffer through it for a decade before you kind of come to your senses and realize that something's not right. So my response to that, at least, you know, for our podcast is that, well, jiu-jitsu is a big part of it. And also just simplification of life. You know, like the simpler your life is, the better, the more complex. So I found that as soon as I simplified, what do I mean by simplified? I mean that, you know, usually if your life, like parish life is complex, of course, yes, like there's an inherent complexity to being a priest, to being in ministry, because there's a lot of moving parts in a parish. But even in that kind of ministry, even this kind of ministry that we do, you can still simplify in the sense that your life can still be structured, and your military background will help you with this, because you have this kind of idea of structure, right? And that is invaluable, in my opinion, in civilian life, and also especially like in priestly life, because you need to be effective and you need to be efficient and not like waste time on things that will not only tire you out, burn you out spiritually, mentally, physically, but also it's a type of discernment, right? Because being able to prioritize what needs to get done, what really needs to get done without too much ego getting in the way, is a very good skill to have. You know, because ego is the fundamental enemy of all of us, and ego in the bad sense, like, you know, in the orthodox kind of sense. And it is the ego that drives us to take on too many things, to do too many projects in the parish, to say yes to too many people, because we have a God complex and we think we're gonna save them all, even though we don't save anybody. It's God that saves them. We think we can do everything. We think we're the best priests. We think we're the best whatever, jiu-jitsu practitioners, whatever. It's always the ego. So the antithesis to that is to simplify. So like personally, what I do is like I simplify is like I have three things in my life and that's it. You know, I have the parish, so I go to the parish a certain amount of times, okay, and I try to be as efficient as possible in what I need to do at the parish. There, I have my kids, my home life, and I have jiu-jitsu. I don't have anything else. I don't have any other extracurricular activities. I don't go out with friends and have drinks. I don't, you know, very rarely. You know what I mean? I don't have any other extracurriculars. I don't do anything. I used to have 50,000 different extracurriculars that I used to do. I used to run camp for the Archdiocese. I used to do this. I used to do that. You know, no, I simplified all that stuff. I don't need to do it. It doesn't have to get done by me. And the moment I did that, it helped a lot, because it's like you have to learn to say no to things and just kind of whittle down the essentials. And that's what I would, that would be my recommendation for you, kind of transitioning to civilian life and then also kind of pursuing priesthood or ordination. It's like that, you know, there's nothing wrong with keeping that type of structure. Like, you're not neglecting your people by being assertive with your own personal time and being, and also recognize that there's things you don't have to do. You don't have to do everything. And you can't do everything. You're a human being, right? So simplify is always good.
Now, reading through your biographies, both of you gentlemen, fathers, I know Father Thomas skipped from almost like a white to purple, then purple to black. And then Father Ted, you went, you had time as a deacon. So, you know, being prior enlisted, becoming an officer, maybe you can compare some of the two. But how essentially, you know, obviously, my bishop, the metropolitan, is going to decide, you know, whether he ordains me the same day or the next day, you know, a priest. But what would be my kind of going in position request? How much time to spend as a deacon? Because I know you had time as a deacon, Father Ted, and I don't know if Father Thomas went directly to being a priest. But what are those two kind of relationships or kind of two different ranks of the clergy and their responsibilities?
I was a deacon for 4 months. I was supposed to be for a year, and then the archbishop changed things on me and wanted me ordained pretty quick. But I like my friend, my daughter's godfather is a deacon in the church. I don't know. For me, it's like Deacon John knows he's only supposed to be a deacon. Whereas when I was ordained a deacon, right, I knew that's not where I was supposed to stay. I knew I was supposed to go to the next. But Father Ted was a deacon for how long? You were a deacon for a while.
18 months. Yeah. So I was trying to pull off 2 years. At that time, that was like a record in Canada, at least at the Greek Orthodox Archdiocese. Yeah. Usually it was like, you know, deacon and then a week, 2 weeks later, priest, right? Because, you know, you have a shortage of priests, right? So you need to kind of fill parishes. And I understand that. But at the same time, it's a balance, right? Like in your situation, Andre, you know, your confessor is also your bishop, right? So it's a little bit different than when your confessor is different, like you have your priest confessor and then you have your bishop, right? So I say that because there needs to be a balance between, you know, obedience and what is expected of you by your bishop and also, you know, your own well-being and what you're ready, right? So there needs to be a conversation, right? So, for example, when I got ordained a deacon, of course, the bishop was like, okay, well, when are we going to get a priest? Like, let's do it in a few weeks, right? Because, you know, I got parishes to fill. And I'm like, no, I'm not ready. And in conversation with my spiritual father, it's like, I'm not ready for that next level. I have to be obedient, of course, as a deacon on that level. But I can't be forced against my will to take on the next level of the priesthood. That has to be my personal choice in conjunction with my spiritual father. So I held out. You know, my bishop was respectful of it. Like, he respected my choice, even though he didn't like it, because I understand he's a bishop. He needs to fill parishes, right? And so I waited. Yeah, I was a deacon. Like in, sorry, it was 16 months. It was 8 months in one parish as a helper, as a deacon, and then I was 8 months in another parish, and then I got ordained. And then by that time, I had, in conjunction with discussions with my spiritual father, I felt that I was somewhat ready, I guess. I had so much, a little bit more, I felt more comfortable with the experience that I had of the two different priests, the two different parishes, from a ministry point of view. And then I was ordained, right? So it has to be something that you have to, you know, there has to be a conversation with your confessor, with your spiritual father. But I wouldn't rush it. Like, my opinion is that people, oh, you got a family, and there's also that aspect, right? You need to work. Like, there's so many things. There's the financial aspect, which people don't want to talk about, but it's a reality, right? Like, what am I going to do, right? Like, how am I going to support my family? There's all these aspects, and yes, those are considerations, but if it's possible, stay a deacon for a while, at least for a bit. Like, just get your feet wet and learn under an experienced priest who can kind of help you, but you don't have the burden of the priesthood in the sense that the deacon, the diaconate is part of the priesthood, but you are not doing sacraments on your own. You can administer, like you can give communion, but you can't consecrate it, you know? You can anoint, but you're not doing the actual anointing service, right? You can, you know, you can visit people in the hospital. You can't hear confessions, but so you can do, it's a good way of getting yourself, enculturated into the ministry without having that extreme pressure of, you know, having to carry the whole parish on your own. And how long that takes for you is up to you and your spiritual father, like how long you feel is a good kind of, you know, it's like a boot camp, right? Like you got to be introduced into it, right? Definitely, I would not recommend, in my opinion, my personal advice is not to get ordained, like, and then 2 weeks later become a priest, because what do you know at that point? You're just being thrown into the deep end. And it can be difficult, right? So that's my advice.
Yeah, appreciate fathers.
If
you guys haven't visited, I don't know if any of you guys been to Hawaii. This is kind of a, you know, I don't know, my party thoughts here, but if you guys ever get a chance, you know, for some of the listeners out there to visit Hawaii and the holy icon over there, it's really a world within a world. You know, what I imagined in my mind, you know, being non-religious before 13 years old, you know, what paradise is, you know. Hawaii comes close to that, you know, not maybe not the main island, Hawaii, or but you know, some of the smaller islands, but it's there. All the vices, everything is there. But then there's this, you know, these churches and beautiful nature, and there's surfing, you know, out there, and the world that where I became, you know, my spiritual growth became. And actually, before signing up for it, was actually Father that basically, you know, recommended that I joined the seminary, online seminary. He studied in Greece, and served in Alaska before that. Today is Saint, we celebrate Saint Innocent of Moscow, and he's from my hometown. He's one of the first saints I ever learned about watching PBS, you know, Station American documentary. And essentially, yeah, he was the metropolitan of Moscow, but before that, he helped the Aleutians in Alaska come up with the alphabet. And what's left in Hawaii is this warrior ethos. That's this pure, and it's honed through jujitsu. There's great jujitsu out there. So sure. Apart from, it's almost like American Mount Athos in a sense, you know. So if any of you listeners get a chance to go and get away, go for at least, you know, a week to get out of the hectic lifestyle, and hopefully you can, you know, they say this, you know, the locals spread the aloha, you know, for like, you know, Nativity Christmas, they beloved this huge Santa in a Santa Claus, and they say, you know, Jesus is aloha and things like that. But it's the native warrior spirit there is present. You can experience it if you do jujitsu. There's a place called Keikoa Collective. You do, you know, it's a surf shop and a jujitsu store on one. So that's where my wife is at. That's why I'm kind of reminiscing. I'm spending, you know, with you guys. My wife is there sunbathing over there, relaxing. You know.
Nice. Yeah. I'd love to be able to go one day. I haven't never been, but it'd be nice to visit it for sure. Yeah. And on that note, like, we're over an hour, guys. Way over an hour, which is awesome. But I think it's actually a good place to kind of slowly start wrapping up a bit.
Yeah, and if you guys want to reach out, I don't do, like, you know, social media much, but I have this, I used to run a school, small school in Hawaii. It's called mancavejujitsu@gmail.com. If any of you guys want to reach out, you know, nice. And you guys that are like hardcore pure bloods out there, and you guys know who that is, you know, people that are into jujitsu and have catechumens, you know, becoming Orthodox. I know there's people that are willing to fight the good fight, even outside of Orthodoxy, that I have good friends with, especially, you know, some of my dungeon brothers that are probably, you know, I'll hopefully share this with, that are Catholic, Protestant, but they fought the same fight I did in the last year and a half. People for whom 9th of May, they wear their, you know, St. George ribbon proudly. You know, those people reach out to me, love to hear from you guys. But anybody, really, I'm trying to figure out a way to put up some sort of a YouTube channel after I become a civilian of raising boys, you know, good men, citizens, God-fearing men. mancavejujitsu@gmail.com. Reach out to me.
Awesome. And we will. Yeah, we'll put that in the description as well. And let us know, you know, keep in touch and let us know how the ordination goes. If there is one in the horizon after you transition and finishing up seminary life. And you know, we'll keep in touch. You know, of course, and maybe you'll come back on as a priest. We'll see.
Yeah, if, you know? Father Thomas can roll me up. Yeah, humble me. Yeah, once I get ordained. Yeah. You know. But yeah. Ted, yeah, once you get that sight control, humble me as well. But I'll do my best. Keep Father Ted out of sight control.
Maybe in the future we'll have a chance to roll together. We always say that with all our guests because, you know, everyone's all over the place. But you never know, right? Because sometimes you take a trip, you know somebody in Virginia, you go roll with them. So. Yeah.
Thank you, fathers. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you very much for coming on, and we'll talk to you soon. Be safe. God bless you. Have a blessed Lent, a blessed Pascha coming up, and to all our listeners as well. God bless all of you. Have a safe and blessed Lent continuance, since this will be airing just probably the second week of Lent, and we will be with everybody in a couple of weeks. So till then, everybody take care. God bless, guys.
You have been listening to The Fighting Priests. Feel free to download us on Spotify, Apple iTunes, or anywhere else you get your content. Check us out on Instagram at The Fighting Priests. And if you have any questions, feel free to email us at thefightingpriests@gmail.com. Till next time, keep training the body and the soul.